Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome into the third hour of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate you being here with us. We've got a lot of news stories today, a whole range of topics we'll be getting to, returning to, if you miss some of it, updates on the Biden economy, the new COVID rules, vaccine mandates, the fight over whether kids should be forced to get the shot or should they get the shot at all. Plus, you've had Kyle Rittenhouse's trial going on in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He took the stand today, which every defense attorney and now everybody who knows the defense attorney will tell you is unusual, considered risky. So far, looks like it has to all viewers, all analysts that I've seen, and Clay and I have been manning this back and forth and talking to you about it, obviously, on air. Looks like Rittenhouse has done well for himself against cross-examination, laid out his story well. Seems to me like this is all clear-cut self-defense. What's been noteworthy is how the prosecution has been getting admonished at various points by the judge, shouted at by the judge in this case. Makes people feel like, certainly I see it as, the prosecution knows they're likely losing at this phase. They are not, in fact, making the case they need to get a guilty verdict on any of the major counts, and perhaps even angling for a mistrial because things have gone so awry. Clay, you know, you watch enough of these trials. If you're somebody who's follows, you know, true crime and watches these legal proceedings they play out for, in different courtrooms, it's rare to see a lot of what we've seen today, right? You don't see a criminal defendant at this level take the stand. He broke down in tears, really emotional moments. You don't see judges shouting and at prosecutors saying, you may get a mistrial over this. This looks like what people think of as courtroom drama. We're actually getting it today in the Rittenhouse case.
Yeah, when you're a practicing attorney, sometimes when you are training, they will say juries expect for there to be law and order moments. They expect for the time to kill moment. They expect, because they've seen the way that Hollywood and television bring trials to their essence, and oftentimes they're disappointed by the minutiae involved in multi-day trials. You don't get very often a few good men moment where Jack Nicholson is sitting on the bench and you're saying, you know, you're right, I did order the code red, basically. What we have seen just in the 2 or 3 hours so far that he has spent on the witness stand is unbelievable, compelling, riveting, can't look away testimony in a case that has received a massive amount of attention, but from a defendant that most of us have never really heard speak. And I think that's why this is so important, Buck, because when you hear someone tell their own story, oftentimes for the first time, that is incredibly striking to a potential juror who has seen the film, has seen Rittenhouse sitting at the table as a defendant. But when he actually speaks, I mean, most of these jurors don't even know what his voice sounds like. They don't know what his mannerisms are. They don't know how he responds to a prosecutor that is going after him and, frankly, appears to be increasingly unhinged. And we just heard from a prosecutor in that last hour call in and talk about the prosecutor tried to make it a big deal that Kyle Rittenhouse had not spoken to authorities until had not told his story publicly until he just sat down at the witness stand. I always say this as a lawyer, don't talk to police when they question you. Lots of people think I'm going to talk my way out of this. And you aren't prepared for that statement to be made, and maybe you're under an incredible amount of duress. And by the way, I'm talking about people who may be charged with a crime. I'm not saying don't talk to police if you know
someone
you're trying to get help
house,
from police.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm saying you know, there's so many people who think, oh, I'm going to talk my way out of this, and they don't really think through what their story is, and they contradict themselves, and they're not even intentionally trying to do that. And so you're right not to speak to police. I mean, I'm kind of stunned that this kid was smart enough in that scenario at 17 years old to not make an immediate statement and walk through everything, because he hasn't had the opportunity to watch the tape. He doesn't know. He would contradict potentially what the film shows. you want to wait till all the evidence is out there. And now he's speaking, but that prosecutor, Buck, tried to come after him for not speaking, which is a foundational right of American jurisprudence. And that's why the judge was so furious at the prosecutor, because it feels in some ways as if the prosecutor realizes the case is not going his direction and wants a mistrial so he can avoid Kyle Rittenhouse being found not guilty by this jury.
I remember when I worked with cops at the NYPD and FBI, because there was a fusion element there with the Joint Terrorism Task Force, they would all tell you, if you're under arrest and you speak, you're a fool. I mean,
yes.
It's absolutely, doesn't matter how clever you think you are, doesn't matter if you're a lawyer yourself.
Yes.
You are foolish to speak the moment they place you under arrest. The moment you think you're about to be arrested, you say nothing. So for the prosecutor to try to in some way impugn the credibility and integrity of Kyle Rittenhouse here because this is the first time he is actually speaking in this way is essentially to try to hold his constitutional right, his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination against him, which is why the judge rightly in this case lost his temper, lost his cool. I think, it was the right thing to do, but was obviously very upset about it. But Clay, we look at why is this such a big case? I mean, what are the prevailing narratives in the background of it? Why are people paying so much attention to it? This got all the way up to the level of the Biden administration weighing in on it. This got all the way up to a national news story where you had the biggest lib media platforms in the country making it seem like Kyle Rittenhouse was, and the words that they used,
we should play that clip again because some people haven't heard that.
Let's play the left-wing news anchors and pundits who are all calling Kyle Rittenhouse things like a terrorist, a school shooter. All here you go.
Kenosha shooter, Kyle Rittenhouse. He murdered two people, by the way.
Rittenhouse is basically what you would have had in a school shooter. He's a 17-year-old kid. He shouldn't have had a gun. He crossed state lines to supposedly protect property. No, he was going out to shoot people.
Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old vigilante.
Kyle Rittenhouse, the vigilante.
Kyle Rittenhouse, the armed teenage vigilante.
A 17-year-old vigilante, arguably a domestic terrorist, picked up a rifle, drove to a different state to shoot people.
Kyle Rittenhouse, a guy who's deeply racist, went with weapons to a Black Lives Matter protest, looking to get in trouble. He did. He murdered a couple of people.
Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old kid, just running around, shooting and killing protesters.
All lies. I mean, everything they say there is a demonstrably false statement. Everything they're saying there is, we talked about it, I mean, he won't be able to sue successfully, but it is slanderous in the sense that these are known falsehoods that they're using to try to malign him. And Clay, it went even beyond just the usual idiots in the media trying to turn this kid into some kind of monster. GoFundMe shut him down. Wasn't allowed to raise money for his defense. And this is a guy who is innocent of the charges, in my opinion, that have been leveled against him.
This is indicative, and this is a problem in many ways. When I was in law school, I was taught by my criminal defense attorney, and I'd later go on to practice some criminal defense myself. The only three things that matter in any case are the facts, the facts, and the facts. And so often, what happens? We just played you that clip. Some of the accusations, murderer, school shooter, 17-year-old vigilante, domestic terrorist, deeply racist murderer. Those are the things that were said about Kyle Rittenhouse. So far, none of those things have been proven. Now, if he's found guilty, he could be a murderer. But at the time that all of these people are speaking, that is not in any way an accurate way to describe a defendant.
Clay, can I just say right now, we got breaking news. The Rittenhouse team has made a motion for mistrial. So this whole thing, we got to see what the judge is going to do here.
Well, I'll analyze that.
Can we join in? Do we have him? Let's go right to this for a second.
That night, there have been questions about what he did, things like that. He has decided, probably on advice of counsel in those circumstances, not to give a statement in the media about what happened. But he is talking about his family life. He's talking about his friends. He's talking about the circumstances of the case. He's talking about how this has affected him and things like that. So my point in asking those questions was, you have agreed to talk to the media. You've agreed to talk about yourself. You've agreed to give interviews. But until now, this is the first time you're explaining your actions. And so I wasn't referring to his in-custody statements. In fact, I never asked either detective about what the defendant told them. He actually starts to tell them some things, and then he says he wants a lawyer, and they stop him. And they Mirandize him first, by the way. Then he starts to tell them some things, and then he says, but I want to talk to my lawyer. And they're like, okay, we're done. So I'm not referring to that. I didn't ask any questions of the detectives about that. But since this, the defendant has spoken to the media. He has talked about his life, about circumstances related to this case. He just hasn't given his exact version of events that night. So his voluntary discussion to speak to the media has nothing to do with the Fifth Amendment. That is his own decision. And if he's going to pick and choose what he wants to talk about in those voluntary interviews with the media, then I think that's fair game. It doesn't implicate his Miranda rights. It doesn't implicate the Fifth Amendment. He's making his own voluntary choice.
Well, wait a minute. You don't think he could give an interview about his awards he won in high school, or his demerits that he got, or his and about his sports activities and his swimming and that? And declined to answer any questions about the incident in question, and that somehow a waiver of his right to silence?
I think he's doing more than that, Your Honor, in these interviews.
I don't know. I knew nothing about them. I haven't seen probably 1% of all the evidence, which is pretty typical, as you know. So I have no way of knowing it. You have some interviews that he gave to media or to whatever?
Yeah, there's an interview that we're looking at on our computer right now from the Washington Post.
All right, Clay, let's come back into this in a moment here, because right now, just so you know, this is the procedural back and forth between the prosecutor and the judge here, but Rittenhouse team making a motion for a mistrial, which if granted would bring this whole thing to a halt.
Let me explain that.
Yeah, Clay's going to get into the details
of this. I'll explain exactly what they're trying to do when we come back, because it's not just a mistrial motion. I'll explain exactly what's going on, but you got it. Take us away into the break.
You know, dogs are a man's best friend. The phrase is true. The companionship of a dog, or a cat for that matter, hey Clay, is something we all treasure and appreciate. As a pet lover, we look for ways to extend the life of our dogs and our cats. They're part of the family, after all. A better diet for your dog or cat can help a great deal. That's why we're introducing you to Ruff Greens. It's a healthy supplement specifically made for your dog. The problem is that most dog food is dead food. It's got to be on the shelves in the supermarket for a long time. So that means they have to sterilize that food. That gets rid of all the good stuff in it that your dog needs, like probiotics, enzymes, vitamins, and healthy microbacteria. Ruff Greens is not a dog food. It's a healthy supplement you put into your dog's food with all the live nutrients necessary for superior dog health. Ruff Greens will make your dog healthier by making your dog like the food better and add these nutrients back in. The folks at Ruff Greens think your dog is going to love it, so they've got a special deal. They really want you to try it. Go to ruffgreens.com. That's R-U-F-F. ruffgreens.com/EIB. They're going to give you the first bag free. All you have to pay is shipping. That's ruffgreens.com/EIB. ruffgreens.com/EIB.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We are watching, like many of you, listening, like many of you are, to exactly what is going on. So, in this Kyle Rittenhouse case, the Rittenhouse defense has argued, and there's a discussion going on right now, about whether or not there is going to be a mistrial. This is me putting my lawyer hat on, Buck. You can quiz me on this a little bit if you want. There are different types of mistrials. The Rittenhouse team of attorneys, and I am analyzing without obviously having talked to the Rittenhouse team. I'm trying to analyze this in real time as it's going on. Does not want a mistrial in the context of, we're going to go do this all over again. That's oftentimes what happens in the case of a mistrial. Something occurs that is inappropriate, improper within the trial itself, which necessitates a new trial all over again. That's not what they want. They want a mistrial with prejudice, which means these charges can never be brought against Kyle Rittenhouse again, which is a big step up. Effectively, it is arguing that the prosecution's behavior is so egregious and intentional that they should not benefit from a mistrial, because otherwise, just kind of putting it in context, let's say you have a bad week. You're a lawyer. Everybody can have a bad week at their job, and you just get whipped by the opposing side. What we don't want to happen then in a court proceeding is for someone to intentionally create a mistrial and benefit from their intentional
error.
This
is like in tennis, if you call a redo when someone aces you. No, it's an ace. It's not a redo just because you got aced, and that's what they try to avoid. My understanding, Clay, is that even if they did have a dismissal with prejudice, mistrial with prejudice, rather, that the state could still appeal it, though, right?
100%.
So you could. So even if you get the best possible outcome for the defense here, you could still have a situation where then the higher court steps in and says, actually, you can try this again,
but
and then you'd be back at square one with a new trial if the state wanted to bring the case.
That is true. And again, I want to make it clear, I'm licensed in the state of Tennessee. I am licensed in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Those are the two places that I am licensed. So every state law can be different as it pertains, although there's often a model code, particularly in criminal courts, that are somewhat similar. I want to make it clear, I'm not an expert in Wisconsin criminal procedure, right? But if the trial court judge determines that a mistrial with prejudice should be granted, there is a great deal of discretion given to the trial court judge. Even on appeal, it would have to be a substantial legal error filed by the trial court judge.
It would be a high burden
to overturn
it. Too, because Wisconsin as a state is, and I know we all can talk like big boys and girls here, we all know that the justice system, there are conservatives and leftists in the justice system, and, you know, the judges you're going to get, the prosecutors you're going to get, some are very conservative, some are going to be very liberal, so you'd be rolling the dice. It's not like you'd be having this in a very red state or a very blue state, depending on what judges you'd get who would look at this after the fact. But, I mean, they're really going deep right now into the possibility here of this mistrial, which just goes to show you. I mean, if nothing else, Claire, I think it's clear prosecution is messing this thing up, and it's because Kyle Rittenhouse isn't guilty. That's what's happening.
Well, the other thing I would add is that it's highly unlikely that the judge is going to make a ruling from the bench. He would probably ask for briefings. He would probably want that to be analyzed, and my guess it would be, like, later tonight, he might ask for briefings. Just FYI. Tomorrow is Veterans Day. Tunnel to Towers is doing something remarkable. Another example of them fulfilling their promise to all of us that they will never forget 9/11. Veterans Day is going to lead to a special ceremony to honor the men and women who lost their lives in the War on Terror. Each individual is going to be remembered by their name being called out and spoken of in a new tradition by Tunnel to Towers. Like they have on 9/11, Tunnel to Towers recognizing our selfless soldiers who made the ultimate sacrifice. Between Thanksgiving and New Year's Eve, they're going to give one family after another a mortgage-free home. Families of soldiers and first responders, you can support them as well with the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. You need to donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's t2t.org.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We are following very closely this Rittenhouse trial, Kyle Rittenhouse. He is now back live on the stand in his own defense. The nation is watching. Let's join as he deals with this cross-examination right now.
What wrapped around his face?
His T-shirt.
So he wasn't wearing a shirt the second time around?
Correct.
And you indicated at one point you thought he had a chain in his hand?
I believe so.
When he made the threat to you with the red shirt on and the blue bandana, did he have the chain in his hand?
I think one of the times he did.
Okay, and so which of the times was it?
I can't recall off the top of my head. I think it was the time when he was threatening to cut people's hearts out.
And I don't need to know the threat, I just need to know which time it was. Was it the first time or the second time?
Second time, the second time.
What was he wearing the second time?
He was masked, the shirt wrapped around his face.
And he didn't have a shirt on his torso?
Correct.
Okay. And you could see, when he didn't have a shirt on his torso, that he didn't have any gun tucked in his waistband, correct?
I wasn't paying attention to that. I was behind Joanne Fiedler. I was somewhere over there.
So how far away were you from Mr. Rosenbaum when he made the second threat?
By 10, 15 feet, I'm not really certain.
But you were close enough to hear the words out of his mouth?
Yes.
And you took that as a threat to you personally?
I took the first one where he said, if I catch you alone, I'm going to kill you. I took that as a threat to me personally. The second time, I took that as a threat to the group.
Can we have that photo, exhibit 138, up on the screen, please?
Waiting here for evidence. Glenn are watching here. Kyle Rittenhouse testifying in his own defense. He's on the stand currently as we are speaking to you, being cross-examined by a very aggressive prosecution. Here you go.
Picture? I do.
And he's in the middle of the picture wearing the red shirt with the blue bandana, carrying the plastic bag, correct?
Yes.
Is that the way he looked when he made the first threat to you?
When he said, if I catch you alone, yes.
And he was carrying that plastic bag with him when he made that threat too, correct?
Correct.
How close was he when he made that first threat to you?
Close. I couldn't give you an exact estimate, but he was close, less than 5 feet.
So closer than Madam Court Reporter is to you now?
I'd say about the same, if not a little bit closer.
And you were next to Mr. Balch when that was said?
Correct.
Was anyone else there besides you, Mr. Balch, and Mr. Rosenbaum?
I believe there were other demonstrators around.
And you've seen in this trial that there's been a lot of video footage of that night, correct?
Yes.
And you've seen in this trial that there's a lot of video footage of you that night, correct?
Yes.
You'd agree with me that there's no video of either one of these threats, correct?
I don't know if somebody filmed it that I'm aware of right now.
You're not aware of any, are you?
I'm not.
So Mr. Rosenbaum looked like that at the time of the first threat, but then looked different at the time of the second threat? Is that right?
Yes.
And did you say he was carrying the chain when he made the first threat or the second one?
The second.
Okay. And he was still carrying that plastic bag the second time?
Yes.
That plastic bag has a clear side to it that allows you to see inside of it, right?
Sort of. I didn't really look into the bag.
So you didn't know what was in the bag at all?
I didn't.
Did he swing the chain at you when he made the second threat?
He did not.
Did he physically touch you when he made the second threat?
No, he didn't.
In fact, that entire evening, he never once touched your body, did he?
He grabbed my gun when he attacked me.
And that's why I asked the question the way I did. He never touched your body that night, correct?
He didn't touch me physically.
Okay. And neither the first or the second time did he run at you or charge at you or anything like that, did he?
He didn't chase me.
He didn't even do anything physically aggressive to you, did he?
No.
He just said some words.
Yes.
And that chain that he had in his hand, he never did anything to physically threaten you with that chain, correct?
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
And other than the chain that you've described, at no point in the evening did you ever see Joseph Rosenbaum with any other type of weapon, correct?
Not that I saw.
Never saw him with a gun?
Correct.
Never saw him with a knife?
Correct.
Never saw him with a bat?
Correct.
Never saw him with a club?
Correct.
How far apart in time were these two threats that you say Mr. Rosenbaum made to you?
I want to I can't give you a definite time. I wasn't looking at my clock, but I'd say within the same hour.
And both of those threats occurred while you were on the 59th Street property?
The second threat happened at the corner, and the first threat happened towards Reuther Central High School.
Okay, could you use that laser pointer and point out on that map where the first threat occurred?
The first threat happened right here in front of the building.
So you're pointing at a location that is by the 59th Street car source on the south side of that property, along the building and Sheridan Road on the west side of the road. Would that be accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so we're continuing to watch closely here as the prosecution is now getting more into the specifics of the self-defense claims here that Kyle Rittenhouse has made. I mean, Clay, I know this is, it's piece by piece. It's in the courtroom, so it's not all in 15 or 30 second sound bites. Anything noteworthy to you based on how this is being built here by the prosecutor?
I would just say this, Buck. You cannot understate the stress level that you are on as you are sitting there as the witness, trying to keep yourself from going to jail, maintaining your composure while you are being grilled by a prosecutor, just the mental stress that you are under. Leave aside whatever you are talking about in a criminal case like this where you are facing time in prison. It will be interesting to see how long Kyle Rittenhouse is on the stand and how much of a grilling this prosecutor will try to go after him on, hoping that as he is talking, he can find some small measure of inconsistency to exploit. And for everybody out there listening to us right now, I think a lot of times it's underrated how much stress in a criminal case witnesses are under as they are grilled. And so the time that you're on this witness stand, this is coming out of a lunch break. So the time that you're on there, the sweating, the stress, your elevated heart rate, all of those things play into your ability to accurately recall mentally what exactly was going on and to try to forecast where this is headed. I think people just need to keep that in their mind, and they may not be thinking about the mental acuity and the mental strain that somebody on a witness stand is under, because when you listen to it, you're like, oh, that's just somebody answering questions. It's a crowded courtroom. Cameras are on you. You've got a jury box sitting there watching your every move, judge next to you. It's an overwhelmingly intimidating experience for anyone, much less a high school kid who is being grilled about whether or not he's going to be able to return to a normal life or go into a prison.
Yeah, his next 30 or 40 years of his life, perhaps, could be spent in a cell determined by the answers he's giving here. Now, so far, he seems to have a very strong case, but as Clay points out, it is still going on right now, this cross-examination. This prosecutor really does come across to me as, first of all, being a smarmy lib. That's part one. But part two, doesn't like Kyle Rittenhouse. I think that's quite clear.
By the way, the jury is judging the prosecutor just like they're judging the witness. And a lot of people forget that. The way that the prosecutor is coming across, he's on a stage just like the witness himself. And much of, remember, they're not hearing the debates over whether or not there's a mistrial, whether or not there's inappropriate things that have been said, but they are judging whether they trust the prosecutor, just like they're judging whether or not they trust Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah, this prosecutor double masks outside alone just because he takes the virus seriously. I can tell you that right now. Whether the stock market is up or down, the value and price of gold remains steady and reliable. Gold is a great source of protection for your portfolio. It holds its value, particularly when you compare it to the shrinking dollar. Owning gold is good for your savings account and good for your IRA. And there's a great satisfaction in owning gold and taking physical possession of it, literally holding it in your hands and storing it securely in your home. Our partners at the Oxford Gold Group are so good at answering questions and making it easy to understand how and why this is such a good investment right now. So if you think buying real gold is complicated, my friends at the Oxford Gold Group are who you need to call. They'll explain everything to you. Having real gold delivered to your home or having real gold as part of your IRA, it is just a phone call away with Oxford Gold. Call them at 833-404-GOLD and learn how you can have real gold in your IRA and delivered to your door. That's the Oxford Gold Group at 833-404-GOLD, 833-404-GOLD.
Visit ClayandBuck.com for audio and transcripts of your favorite segments from today or any show. Share them and spread the word. Plus videos, articles, and more. ClayandBuck.com. Inspired by Rush.
Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We are rolling through the final segment here. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. And much of today's show has been focused on, frankly, the riveting, the unexpected testimony of Kyle Rittenhouse in his own defense as he is being cross-examined by prosecutors in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And there has been a motion in the last hour made by the Rittenhouse defense team to have a mistrial declared with prejudice, which would mean these charges would never be able to be brought against Kyle Rittenhouse. A mistrial with prejudice is a more severe standard than simply a mistrial, which would just require a new trial. And they were discussing this within the last 30 minutes, and the judge in this case is furious with the prosecutor, with the state of Wisconsin prosecutors, which are attempting to convict Kyle Rittenhouse. I want to just play a cut for you of the judge lacerating the prosecutor over his decision to ask questions that he said were outside the bounds of his rulings.
There was, you know, don't get into other subjects. Get it. Come on, what you're telling me, you're an experienced trial attorney, and you're telling me that when the judge says, I'm excluding this, you just to take it upon yourself to put it in because you think that you found a way around it? Come on. I don't believe you. There better not be another incident. I'll take the motion under advisement.
You don't ever want the judge saying, I don't believe you on either side. I mean, and if you have seen, you just heard the anger in his voice. I think that he wants to grant a mistrial with prejudice in this case. But I also think in the moment he wants to take it under advisement as opposed to doing it from the bench during the course of this trial. And also, he's been sitting there for 8 days. He may prefer that the jury render their verdict and take this necessity out of his hands by finding Kyle Rittenhouse.
Right. You're almost at the end, right? So to do effectively, to open the door for, in any context, a redo, especially given how this seems to be going for the defendant so far, would be pretty severe. And as we discussed, I believe under Wisconsin law, they could appeal even a mistrial with prejudice. And so this would get back into the system. And everybody knows the politics behind this are enormous because Rittenhouse for the left represented somebody, an armed citizen, standing up and being willing to use force in the defense of himself and his community against the left-wing hordes that were ravaging cities all across America. That's what actually happened here. And they don't want people, they first of all, of course, they completely reject that narrative. They have this whole thing about Rittenhouse was a racist, even though there's still zero evidence of any kind. It's not only not a racist, he seems like a very civic-minded and mild-mannered and nice and neighborly fellow. I mean, this notion of him as a white supremacist or a school shooter or anything is just the kind of hyperbolic bullcrap you can expect on MSNBC and CNN to tell their left-wing audiences what they want to hear. So, I mean, Clay, this is a circumstance where right now as we're talking, he's looking at the screens in court where they have all this footage. And from the very beginning, the video footage, to me, was strong enough that, I mean, I think that it was unjust for them to even bring these charges against Rittenhouse based on the video evidence that shows clear self-defense. You can't mob somebody who has a gun, or anybody for that matter, and attack them and expect that they're just going to sit there and take it. I know that that's what we're supposed to do in the left-wing mobs, you know, clutches, but people actually don't want to do that in this country.
We played the clip, and I told our crew to flag it because we'll wait and see what the jury ends up ruling here. But the mainstream media labeled him, Kyle Rittenhouse, a murderer, a school shooter, a 17-year-old vigilante, a domestic terrorist, a deeply racist murderer. First of all, the three people that he shot were all white.
Mm-hmm.
Not that if the race of one of these perpetrators, alleged attackers, had been different, that would demonstrate something different. Necessarily, the self-defense claim would still be the same, white, black, Asian, or Hispanic, no matter what the race of these individuals were. And given that he was acting as he was being attacked. I doubt that the race of the individuals involved factored very much into his decision making at all. But all three of these guys that were shot on that night were convicted felons. So this, again,
one was
I don't
a sex
believe
offender,
was,
by the way. Just to-
yeah, one. I mean, I'm reading their rap sheets right now. One was a sex offender. Another had been found guilty of felony burglary and illegal weapons and had violated probation.
And
that was the individual.
Clay, that these are the people that are out there. These are the sort of left-wing Biden voters who are out there for social
rioting.
Justice, you're supposed to believe.
Yes.
You know, these are, if you watch CNN, the people who attacked, the criminals who attacked Kyle Rittenhouse are supposedly the good guys.
Yes. And then the other individual was a convicted felon as well. Assault and battery, domestic abuse, false imprisonment, illegal weapons. I'm reading from their rap sheets. Now, that to a large extent is not in the same way that people said. Remember, we took calls yesterday and somebody said, oh my, why was this kid out there with a weapon in the first place? The question is, did he have a defense and believe that he was in danger in that moment in time? It's not why was he there. It's not what were these guys who were chasing him, what was their background. It is, did he believe that his life was in peril in that moment? And was he justified in executing self-defense? And based on the evidence so far and his own testimony, I think it is very hard to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he did not have elements of self-defense here, which would render him not guilty of these charges.
We'll come back tomorrow with more analysis of this Kyle Rittenhouse trial and also all the rest of the news across the country. That'll be on the Clay and Buck Show. Be sure to come back with us.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.